This means that Donald Trump will be the 45th president of the United States.
This is your life now. This is our election now. This is us. This is our country. It's real.
Hello and welcome to this week's 45th podcast. This week, unfortunately, Robbie is out. Her dad has some health issues, but he's now out of the hospital and doing better, which is great. So this week, we have a special guest host joining us, and it is my friend, Greg Lewis, which is, for the record, not his actual name due to employment issues. But Greg Lewis, as he'll be known here, we go way back, like, what, 10 years now? Shit, it's been a while. And Greg spent more than a decade working in government, primarily in policy, legislation, regulation, and he's been working at the federal, state, and local levels. Welcome to the show, Greg. I'm doing air quotes. You can't see it.
Thanks, Susan. It's good to be here.
So, have you drank any bleach this week?
Not intentionally. You?
Not yet. And I have not had a chance to read the article yet, which kind of kills me, but I did see something about how the woman who, she and her husband drank whatever the chloroquine that was fish tank cleaner, apparently she's now being investigated for murder charges.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's a dark twist I didn't see coming.
You know, I don't know if when people start trying to drink disinfectant en masse, there's anything but a dark turn at the end of it, but that's just me.
Yeah. So this latest round of bleach drinking, what have you, it came about, as always, due to a press conference. Now, I kind of went on strike lately with these. I just mostly stopped watching because, I mean, let's be real, they're boring as shit. But I did turn in halfway through to this one, and I happened to turn it on right when, like, the question of, like, injecting yourself with sunshine came up. And I was trying to piece it together, like, okay, what's going on here? Why is Trump talking about inserting sunshine into human bodies? Is there some kind of context here? There was a little bit, but no, end of the day, not really. So let's see here, what Trump was talking about last week, this week, whatever week it was, that has, you know, led to the bleach drinking craze.
Very interesting. So supposing we hit the body with a tremendous, whether it's ultraviolet or just very powerful light, and I think you said that hasn't been checked, but you're going to test it. And then I said, supposing you brought the light inside the body, you can, which you can do either through the skin or in some other way. And I think you said you're going to test that too. Sounds interesting.
We'll get the right folks who could.
Right. And then I see the disinfectant where it knocks it out in a minute, 1 minute. And is there a way we can do something like that by injection inside or almost a cleaning, because you see it gets on the lungs and it does a tremendous number on the lungs. So it'd be interesting to check that. So that you're going to have to use medical doctors with. But it sounds interesting to me. So we'll see. But the whole concept.
So, yeah. What was your take on that? What is your expert analysis of this?
I think, unfortunately, he actually may have thought that was a good idea. Despite later hearing that it was meant sarcastically, what I got from it at the moment was that, like, you know, he got these briefings that maybe light and sunshine would play some role in killing the virus. And so, like, just thought, well, no one has thought of the idea that you could just inject light into the human body. I actually think he thought he was putting out a genuinely good idea.
No, he did. And this is why, like, bleach bottles have warnings on them, because people all over the world had the exact same thought process that Trump had there. They're like, disinfectant kills germs. I have germs I want to kill. Why has no one ever considered doing this? Let's just drink the bleach and see what happens.
It reminds me of if you were playing beer pong in college, everybody thought that those cups had to be clean because you kept pouring more beer into them.
I like how you phrase that as if. Hypothetically, if you ever play beer pong. Yes, and what's the point of that? Yeah, just pour some water in there, wash it out, you're good to go. No, those were like germ cesspools. But point being, Trump had the same thought process that has led many people to end up in the ER for consuming substances that should not be drank or inserted. Or what was his phrase? He was like, sunshine should be like injected or otherwise obtained into the body. Like, is there...
Well, I think he said injected or otherwise introduced, which you can do.
Like a suppository? Like, well, what else are we doing here?
I was actually wondering that part too, because, you know, when he said what you can do, he seemed to sort of understand in the moment that maybe there wasn't a way to do that. At which point he then said, which you can do.
You can see like the levers kind of moving, slowly chugging along.
Yeah. There. I'll say you can do it. And then if it can't be done, it's just a lack of will and creativity from scientists.
Yeah. Well, let's get away from whatever that is for a brief moment and go to the actual science. There was a DHS official who was at the hearing and spoke about some recent research, which is how it's all started. And here is what the official, William Bryan, had to say.
Most striking observation to date is the powerful effect that solar light appears to have on killing the virus, both surfaces and in the air. We've seen a similar effect with both temperature and humidity as well, where increasing the temperature and humidity, or both, is generally less favorable to the virus. So let me illustrate with this first slide.
Now, none of this is like groundbreaking. I mean, the fact that UV radiation will kill viruses is well known. So I'm not sure how useful that is necessarily. But at the same time, you know, it's good to know that it outdoors will be less dangerous the warmer it gets, and that at least in outdoor spaces, maybe infection isn't as likely to happen.
No, right. I think it is useful to be aware of that. And potentially it's something that states and municipalities can take into consideration when they're looking at reopening protocols. Maybe activities can be a little bit more relaxed outside. There is absolutely value in knowing that ultraviolet light and sunshine can play some role in minimizing the spread of the disease in some way.
But notice what is not being briefed at these press briefings, whatever they are. There's no one there saying, oh, we did research and it proves that summer weather kills the virus and stops transmission. Or that, like, as soon as April gets here, it'll go away. No one has been saying that, which is a little bit unfortunate. I think I was still kind of hoping secretly that maybe, just maybe, once we hit, like, May, we'll, like, hit the off spell for a little while. But
yeah, no, I think we're all like sort of wishing there was some easy way out of this. I'm yet to see that, but I would be as delighted as anyone if you find it.
Yeah. So, you know what? We got sunlight. It helps a little bit. You can't inject it. That's not going to work, but we've got that small thing going for us right now.
I mean, either way, it'll still make exercising outside more pleasant. And, you know, there's that.
So anyway, at some point, it does seem like Trump kind of started to understand that what he was saying was not a good idea, and rather than coming off as like the brave genius who goes where others refuse and boldly finds solutions where others did not, I think like it kind of triggered in him that, okay, this is not actually a thing you want to say in public ever. So of course he turns and starts attacking the media.
Briefings, they want to get information and guidance and want to know what to do. They're not looking for rumors.
I'm the president and you're fake news. And you know what I'll say to you? I'll say very nicely, I know you well. I know you well because I know the guy. I see what he writes. He's a total faker. So are you ready? Are you ready? Are you ready? It's just a suggestion from a brilliant lab by a very, very smart, perhaps brilliant man. He's talking about sun. He's talking about heat. And you see the numbers. So that's it. That's all I have. I'm just here to present talent. I'm here to present ideas. Because we want ideas to get rid of this thing. And if heat is good, and if sunlight is good, that's a great thing as far as I'm concerned. Go ahead.
Yeah, at this point, he starts like actually claiming that this whole idea about injecting sunlight and disinfectant was not his. It was just him letting his experts express their great ideas.
So I would say that in general, if you're trying an experimental new strategy to attack a virus, the place to first raise that idea is probably not a videotaped, I shouldn't say videotaped, that dates me a little bit, but a recorded press conference.
A live, widely watched, like, Bachelor-level ratings press conference. Yeah, Trump brags about that as if, like, we're not in a quarantine, there's no sports on right now. Like, the numbers are not, like, artificially inflated because of that alone. Anyway, point being, that stupidity was live for a big chunk of the U.S. to watch and to be really confused by in action. And What was interesting is that, as usual, the whole right-wing spin machine started, like, gearing up to, like, defend this. But no one seemed to know how to defend it. The defenses right out the gate were all over the place. Like, did you see that Breitbart article that was like, no, Trump did not just suggest injecting disinfectant?
I saw the headline of it on Twitter. As a rule, I try not to click on Breitbart articles.
That's a good rule.
I mean, I just assume there's a virus, and not the coronavirus, but some sort of malware waiting for me on the other side. I mean, best case scenario, I get to a Breitbart article and I still lose.
Well, the new press secretary, however long she lasts for, immediately went out with kind of a mealy mouth, like, oh, he's being taken out of context defense, claiming that, quote, leave it to the media to irresponsibly take President Trump out of context. I mean, okay, fine, whatever. But the Trump support of the hardcore MAGA crowd, not necessarily the political wing, but like the online Trumpies, they went all in on like, okay, what Trump said was great and brilliant, and this is a real thing, and he is doing science, and you're making fun of him for stuff that's real, and you're too stupid to realize it. So.
And like, that's the danger of this, right? It's to people who aren't taking it seriously, it's sad, it's kind of funny, it's a combination of a lot of things, but one thing it is not is instructions you're going to follow. But the tragedy here is that states all over the country were getting increased calls to poison control hotlines, you know, asking about instructions, or I don't know, they may have also been raising complaints about other people who've tried to ingest this stuff. It's dangerous. I mean, like, there's no other way to put it.
Yeah. And I mean, the defense basically boils down to, like, it's fine if the president tells people to do dangerous, likely fatal things because no one would listen to him. Who would do what the president says or suggests? Like, that'd be stupid. Like, who the hell would do something that crazy? But he's the president. He is the president, and he is speaking with weight of massive authority. And when he says stuff like this, people who respond by doing dangerous things, it's not their fault. It's predictable. On a grand scale, it is predictable people will respond that way. And he's responsible for that. Like, it's not just like, oh, they're so stupid, they deserve it. It's like, this is why you can't go around telling people to do things that can kill them.
I'll put aside questions of personal responsibility on that and just say, you shouldn't have to ask yourself when the president is addressing the nation about appropriate responses to a pandemic, whether or not the president's instructions are immediately dangerous to you. It's a level of analysis Americans shouldn't be asked to do.
That seems fair. Of course, the other take was the Dr. Birxian take, which was in fine pink lady style. Just pure nonsense. It's the same stuff she's been saying before. Like, Trump is so bright and analytical. Like, he just learns all this stuff so quick. And this defense was a variation on that theme.
No, when he gets new information, he likes to talk that through out loud and really have that dialogue. And so that's what dialogue he was having. I think he just saw the information at the time, immediately before the press conference, and he was still digesting that information.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a fan of Dr. Birx. I think her approach is wrongheaded. But also, on a less, like, rational or fair level, I feel like she's always talking to, like, a class of really dumb students. And, like, oh, good for you. You did 2+2. I'm so proud of you. Let's go over again really slowly. And here she's, like, cheering on the president. Like, oh, he's so, you can see his mind working in live action as he carefully works through this new data he's absorbing. Like,
you have to wonder, when she was getting her education, if she one day saw herself doing this kind of PR. Like, I can't say I'm a huge fan of those briefings either, as far as what she is, how she is approaching them. But also, man, just the difficulty of getting up and going to work every day, I assume with the hope of helping people, and then having to do this type of PR.
Did you see the clip of her face? Someone was videoing the briefing from, like, a different angle, where you could see her face on the sides behind Trump as he's talking about this stuff. And you could see, like, this growing horror in her eyes creeping up as Trump starts talking.
Yes. Yes, I did. I think that is going to be a meme for many years to come.
If Democrats were at all adequate or competent, it would be an ad. very soon, but it won't be.
That's probably true. Though, you know, there have, although actually come to think of it, I think one of them was from like the Lincoln Project. Another was from Rule of Law Republicans, a couple of ads, basically just showing these briefings with a couple of chyrons on them.
Finding the perfect present for your mom is tough, especially when you don't have the luxury of being together for Mother's Day, which unfortunately is the case for most of us right now. But I know more than anything, parents cherish spending time with their family. And that's why I'm giving my mom the most meaningful gift this year, a chance to connect with loved ones through StoryWorth. StoryWorth is a fun and meaningful way to engage with family, especially with relatives that you may not get to see very often. This online service helps your loved ones share stories through thought-provoking questions about their memories and personal thoughts. It's the gift of spending time together wherever you live. Every week, StoryWorth emails your family member with different story prompts, questions you've never thought to ask, like, what have been some of your life's greatest surprises? And what's one of the riskiest things you've ever done? Reading these weekly stories together is fun and makes your family feel close even when you can't be all together. After 1 year, StoryWorth will compile every answered question and photo that you chose to include into a beautiful keepsake book that's shipped for free. Your family will treasure this book forever. So give your mom the most meaningful gift this year with StoryWorth. Get started right away without the need for shipping by going to storyworth.com/45th. You'll get $10 off your first purchase. That's storyworth.com/45th for $10 off. Well, after all of Trump's supporters sacrificed themselves in his defense to come up with all kinds of explanations for why this thing he said was not as crazy and awful and, yes, hilarious as it really is, after all of that, Trump then comes out with his own explanation of what happened.
Can you clarify your comments about injections of disinfectant?
No, I was asking a question sarcastically to reporters like you just to see what would happen. Now, disinfectant for doing this maybe on the hands would work, and I was asking the question of the gentleman who was there yesterday, Bill, because when they say that something will last 3 or 4 hours or 6 hours, but if the sun is out or if they use disinfectant, it goes away in less than a minute. Did you hear about this yesterday? But I was asking a sarcastic and a very sarcastic question to the reporters in the room about disinfectant on the inside. But it does kill it, and it would kill it on the hands, and that would make things much better. That was done in the form of a sarcastic question to the reporters.
So you were okay.
You said you were being sarcastic, but some people may have misunderstood you. Do you want to just clarify?
Well, I wish they wouldn't. I wish they would. Well, I think I did. But I wish they wouldn't.
Yeah. Was there any indication whatsoever of sarcasm in that initial briefing?
None that I detected.
Did Fox News even take this up? As far as I'm aware, no one else has actually endorsed this approach or have agreed with Trump's sarcasm claims.
No, I don't. I think the only way you can reasonably argue that is if you don't show a clip. Because, like, even the most dry delivery possible, nothing about that suggests that it was a joke or, like, you know, sort of a condescending toss away to reporters who were annoying him.
And of course, even after taking this, oh, I'm just being sarcastic defense, in the same brief, the same, you know, question and answer session, Trump immediately backtracks and then says, oh, you know what? Actually, I was being totally serious. I did, in fact, ask people to look into this because it's a great idea.
I do think this, yeah, I do think that disinfectant on the hands could have a very good effect. Now, Bill is going back to check that in the laboratory. You know, it's an amazing laboratory, by the way. It's amazing, the work they do. So he's going to check because a hard surface, this is a hard surface, I guess maybe depending on whose hand you're talking about, right? But this is a hard surface. And disinfectant, the disinfectant has an unbelievable, it wipes it out. You know, you saw it. Sun and heat and humidity wipe it out. And this is from tests. They've been doing these tests for, you know, a number of months. And the result, so that I said, well, how do we do it inside the body or even outside the body with the hands? And disinfectant, I think, would work. He thinks would work. But you use it when you're doing your hands. I guess that's one of the reasons they say wash your hands. But whether it's washing your hands or disinfectant on your hands, it's very good. So they're going to start looking at that, okay?
But just to clarify that, sir. Are you encouraging America? You're not encouraging Americans to.
No, of course. No, of course. That was interior-wise. It's said sarcastically. It was put in the form of a question to a group of extraordinarily hostile people, namely the fake news media. Okay.
Some doctors felt they needed to clarify that after.
Well, of course. All they had to do was see it was just, you know, the way it was asked. I was looking at you. I know.
Anyway, this is Trump's new favorite defense for all the dumb shit he says is actually, I was just kidding. I was being sarcastic. Even when it makes no sense logically or in terms of tone.
The thing is, you do sometimes hear him saying things that are clearly sarcastic. Subtlety is not one of the man's strengths. And so I'm not sure why you would look at any of this and reach the conclusion that he was being sarcastic.
Yeah, his sarcasm is very direct. It's a very, like, obvious, in-your-face kind of sarcasm.
Exactly. Look, it's, like, it's very New York.
That's a nice way of describing it, I guess. Or is it?
For what it's worth, that is not meant as an insult. It's just, like, it's a very sort of, big, gregarious kind of sarcasm.
Not the Southern backstabby kind.
No, this is not like a pearl clutching, blue flame kind of thing. This is, you're not going, I don't think anyone will be unaware that he is being sarcastic.
Except for this week when there's like no sign whatsoever and he's like, yeah, I'm sarcastic. Like the Nobel Prize tweets that briefly were a thing before he deleted them, where he is like, oh, reporters should not have gotten their Nobel Prize, N-O-B-L-E. For Russia reporting. And then eventually someone must have clued him into the fact that it's not Nobel, it's Nobel. And also it's a Pulitzer. There's no like Nobel Prize for journalism. Anyway, his defense was, I was being sarcastic, of course. Like that was all obviously a joke. How'd you idiots not pick up on that?
Yeah, no, I mean, it does sort of have that feel of when you're a teenager and you ask somebody out and they say no, and then you were just kidding.
That is definitely his favorite, his new go-to, because I'd call it Orwellian, but I feel like Orwell didn't go far enough. Even he didn't contemplate this level, right?
Well, it's hard to say, because I feel like the things that people were being asked to buy in Orwell novels had a certain logic to them.
More sinister. It was more directed. It was... Yeah, big evil grand scheme here. This is just like the president saying you should inject sunlight, and now we're going to pretend that it made sense.
Yeah, no, I think that's the issue, right? In 1984, when they told you that you would believe everything the party said, there was a reason for that. And they generally were only telling you things that were specifically in the party's interest. I'm not really sure whose interest any of this is in.
Yeah, now they're just telling us that Alabama is in the storm path because that's how things worked out. There's no plan here. That's just what the moment requires. So we're going to roll with that.
You do read stories about how he told staff early on that he viewed this like a TV show and every day was going to be its own new episode. And so I suppose if you view it through that framework, maybe there is some logic to it.
I mean, it works. It does distract. It does make it hard to get anything done or to criticize him or to have a robust policy discussion about anything, because I mean, where's the air for policy discussion when the guy in charge who should be leading like all policy initiatives is talking about injecting sunlight?
Well, I think that's maybe part of the reason that some of this stuff is maybe sticking a little bit more now, is that like people can't get distracted as easily. They can't go anywhere. They can't do anything. And so I think now you do have, like you said, there's not much competition, at least on live TV. There's certainly there are episodes of Tiger King for people to watch if they're interested.
But the suffering is not like cordoned off to like one certain area. Like there's no one who's like, I'm totally cool. So maybe some shitty stuff's happening over there, but I can enjoy owning the libs because that's, in my daily life, all that matters. Now everyone's kind of enduring some shit to some level. So his incompetence hits a little raw, maybe, possibly, for some people.
There's a little bit of a snow on the ground problem here where you can't, like, there are certain things as a politician you can lie about and probably get away with it because it's complicated and it's complicated enough that people are going to say, well, I'm not exactly sure what happened, and just move on. But if somebody tells you I cleared your street, you can look out the window and see whether or not that's true. And I think here with 58,000 deaths, I think we're up to in the U.S., I may be off on that. That might be a worldwide number. I think we're at 1 million cases. People are, whether or not they're just stuck at home or they happen to know somebody who's unfortunately contracted the virus in a way that's, you know, caused them to be tested. You know, like you said, this is really hitting people across the country. It's not limited to a specific region or a specific demographic of person. It's hitting everyone.
And that is true overall, I think, is like that's the general, like for the majority of human beings, that's how things are playing out. But one of my hobbies is, you know, looking through Trump support forums and Twitter accounts just to, you know, get the pulse of the people. And one of the fascinating things about this is like the hardcore Trumpies, like the MAGA rah-rah-rah people who are usually Trump's like reliable, insane, but constant support online, they are wavering. Like they are having some like stress over this. They're like, oh, Trump is not, I've noticed lately he's not been the man he used to be. Like he's not the leader that we used to have. Like what's happened? What has changed in him? Why is he doing this? But it's not for the reasons you think, because the hardcore MAGA like people, they're really upset because Trump hasn't just like universally opened everything again. That's why they've lost faith in their leader.
I think that's one of the other challenges you're seeing is that people are getting very mixed messages. Yeah. You're hearing from, you know, and honestly, this isn't even Trump doing it consistently because, you know, one day there's the release of guidelines which do actually appear to contemplate social distancing and some other safeguards. And then there are all the tweets online, liberate this state, liberate that state. And of course, they're all blue states or states with Democratic governors. And, you know, contrast that with what you might be hearing from your local elected officials or governors. And, you know, I can actually understand how a group of people are feeling like things should just be open.
Well, the president himself described distancing measures as being PC. So we now have like that tinge of political, like it is politically correct to engage in life-saving social distancing measures, which is where we're at as a nation. So that's cool.
Yeah. So that's where we are at this point, is following medical advice is PC.
Mm-hmm. And you know who's super confused right now with like how things are going, what everything means? Governor Kemp of Georgia. That poor guy. And by poor guy, I mean that idiot. He can't win for losing. Like, he doesn't know what's going on. Like, one day Trump's calling up, like, yeah, open your state up. That's great. Do that. Go ahead. The next day he's at a briefing. Trump's at a briefing, and he's, like, tearing into Kemp for, like, doing this thing that privately he tells Kemp he thinks is fantastic and wants him to keep pushing ahead on.
That whole thing was fascinating. I mean, also, very sad for the people of Georgia.
Yes.
I mean, I don't know if you saw the mayor of Atlanta came out, I think it was yesterday, might have been the day before, saying, you know, these are our, you know, infection numbers. The science and data are not telling us that it's safe to reopen.
As someone whose entire family is in Georgia, it's terrifying. But like on a abstract level, it's fascinating.
Yeah, no, right. I think you could probably do quite a bit of study on the response of some states. Georgia.
There will be. We're going to deal with this like for the next 2 years. For the next decade, like, we have a built-in experiment in social science and like public health and political science that everyone's going to be writing papers about forever. This is never leaving us. This will be here forever. 100 years from now, I'll be like, let's compare the 1918 pandemic to the 2020 pandemic.
I think you're right. The difference now is that you're going to have all of these recorded source, and boy, I hope Twitter is no longer in existence in its current form. I just cannot imagine what future generations would think if they spent any time on Twitter.
They don't have to. Their history books in grade school are going to have Trump's Twitter feed in them.
Yeah, you know what? As interesting as some of those are, I think the responses to them are in some ways even scarier. Like the things that people share on Twitter, I can't, because, you know, there inevitably are like a couple different categories of tweets. There are the tweets that are awful, but you sort of understand how the person who wrote that tweet arrived at that conclusion. And then there are the tweets where you're like, even if I accept everything you're saying is true, I still don't understand how you reached that conclusion.
It's like Senator Grassley's tweets. only written in like AOL style.
Oh man, I don't think I'm following Senator Grassley on Twitter.
I would say you're missing out, but not really. It's typical like old man internet style where he's like talking to his phone and you don't think he quite understands what Twitter is because it's like very personal at the same time. It's like he'll talk to Trump on Twitter, like, President Trump, don't do this. Let's go do this instead. Let's go chat about it. Like it's a DM or something.
I figured he was just like, you know, I don't know, tweeting at his staff in the office to bring him coffee or the TV remote or something.
Just about. Ember Wave is the first bracelet that helps you feel cooler or warmer at the press of a button. If you're not feeling thermally comfortable, that can contribute to lost productivity, increased stress levels, and can be mentally exhausting. Most public places heat or cool spaces aiming for a temperature that's comfortable for only 80% of the population, leaving many people thermally underserved. And Ember Wave is there when you need relief the most. All you do is press a button to activate Ember Wave and create a cool or warm sensation on your wrist. Or if you're Rabia, on your ankle. This sensation works with your body and mind to make you feel more comfortable in a matter of minutes. It's based on the science of how your mind and body respond to temperature sensations. Beyond just comfort, research shows that Ember's thermal waveforms can also reduce stress and improve sleep because they activate the interoceptive regions of the mind that control social emotion and pleasure. And at the end of a long day, Ember Wave has a fall asleep mode that can help you maintain a comfortable temperature as you drift off to sleep. So if you're dealing with a chilly spring like we are in DC, try Ember Wave to keep you warm even when things outside are kind of gross and miserable. And right now, give the gift of thermal comfort for Mother's Day. Take $70 off the Ember Wave now during their site-wide sale. Just go to emberwave.com/45th to redeem this offer. Go to emberwave.com/45th. So, in terms of actual policy response to the coronavirus, we do have a new initiative. I use that word loosely because most other initiatives have turned out to be nothing, like the Walmart parking lot COVID drive-through testing thing that Kushner was hyping. But there is a new plan, and it is called Operation Warp Speed, which is a terrible name. Like, seriously? Like, they're calling it a, quote, Manhattan Project-style effort. But, like, Manhattan Project's a cool name. This is, like, a dumbass name. I'm sorry. Speaking of which, randomly, guess what happened this week?
There's a Star Trek reunion of some kind.
The Navy released like evidence of like UFOs. And everyone's like, sorry, don't have time for this.
Wait, what? I totally missed this.
Really? They released like 3 videos of like UFOs. I mean,
now, Susan, did you see this news on Twitter?
I did. But I watched the videos and I am very skeptical of anything about aliens. But at the same time, like, it's not aliens. Aliens are not real. Not here. But at the same time, I got nothing better to explain it. Like, what is that? What are these things?
I may need to check out the videos. Were they coming from any kind of a reputable source?
The Navy. Like, they're from the Navy. They're legit, like, DOD videos.
Oh, all right. These are, like, legit
DOD. These are straight-up DOD videos of, like, their aircraft have, like, the pilots have filmed stuff they've encountered. They're like, what is this thing that defies all known laws of physics? And you never even heard of it. Can you imagine this happening in, like, 2010?
You know, I think just living in the post-truth era, stuff like this happens. We're just like, oh, yeah, of course.
It's like in the old days, there were Friday news dumps, but now we don't really have that because it's just like one long news cycle. So in this like coronavirus thing, the Navy is like, shit, this is our Friday news dump. Send out like the UFO evidence right now. Like, just get it out there. No one's going to care or pay attention. And we can just move on.
Apparently, they were right.
They were.
Because I feel like I would have noticed that.
No, it was. Go watch them. They are very weird. Again, can't be aliens because that's impossible, but I don't know who else is doing that.
Oh, I don't know. I'm not completely willing to rule out the possibility of aliens.
I mean, they got here and were like, well, I am not messing with this. Let's just peace out and like pretend we're never here. I mean, that's, you know.
I mean, you know, you probably don't want to travel galaxies away. I don't know what the actual measurement of space should be, but you don't want to travel galaxies and then have to social distance. Like, I feel like that's really anticlimactic for the aliens.
Can you imagine being an alien spending, like, what, millions of light years, like, traveling to this far-off planet where you saw signs of life, and you get here and you're like, take me to your leader. And they're like, oh, well, about that. come back in, like, 2021, maybe?
I was just, like, maybe hoping they'd introduce him to to LeBron or something.
Just like, anyone else. Just fake it. Just pretend.
Just find somebody who is a leader in a different way that we can all be proud of.
So, anyway, Operation Warp Speed. Back to the whole COVID thing. This is, again, allegedly, a project that will fast forward on the vaccine production.
So, what are your thoughts on this?
The saddest thoughts I've had on this is someone posted an article from like 1986 about the HIV crisis. And it was like the NHS saying, we'll have a vaccine within 2 years. And I was like, oh my God, they thought they're going to have a vaccine for AIDS in 2 years. 30 something years later, where it was a good reminder that this whole vaccine thing, like, yeah, it's a good idea. We should definitely try it. But this is not like a certain here. This is not something that like we're sure is going to happen. It doesn't always happen.
Right. I feel like we may disagree on this, although this comes with a million caveats. I don't hate the idea in concept.
Of the Operation Warp Speed? No. It's something like, you know, fast-forwarding the vaccine process is absolutely the obvious call, which raises the question, why is it only now that they've actually thought of this?
That is a great question. Like, To the extent that this was something you could do, it seems like something that around March 15th at the latest probably should have been initiated.
Yeah, probably much sooner, but definitely by then. Not by like end of April when...
Although, you know, in fairness, I think part of it might be that up until that point, you did actually have the White House, or I should say the president, the White House and the president weren't always saying the same thing, saying that this was a new hoax, and although I guess he was calling Democratic response to it a hoax, but he was saying that
he wasn't being clear on purpose so that he could have this argument later on.
Right. This was going to miraculously disappear. It was just like the flu. I think you couldn't have invested hundreds of billions of dollars into Operation Warp Speed while simultaneously saying this is not a thing.
So here's the conversation we're not having, or that I'm not seeing, that I'm kind of surprised that we're not having, even though it's a little bit awkward and has like a little bit of shade of like eugenics in there. Not quite, but hear me out. This is a horrible crisis that's destroying the entire world right now, and hundreds of thousands of people will die from it. When it comes to vaccine development, I feel like normal rules can go out the window. Like doing things that risk lives and testing, I feel like it's acceptable now in a way it never was before. I don't think that's a discussion that's actually being had in like the medical ethics level that I've seen. And it's not a great thing to talk about or contemplate, but like at the same time, where we are now, risking lives to get a vaccine sooner doesn't seem off the table to me. Not that I want the Trump administration handling that, but as a general, like universal rule.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's part of the challenge here is that in general, the country is so divided that if this were another administration hearing about Operation Warp Speed, you might be cheering it on, even if you still took some umbrage with the name.
I always would. I feel like that's universal for me. I'm not being biased by this. It's just purely hating on the name, Democrat or Republican. It's still a stupid name.
Listen, I hear it. I just want to say engage. I remember who's behind it. And I'm like, yeah, there are good reasons to be skeptical.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's, I agree though. I think it's one thing to sit there and say that it's okay to sacrifice lives for the economy. I can't subscribe to that. But if you get to a point where you can say, you know, if we test this and we do it faster, we may save tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of lives, but it could put the people involved in the trials at risk. I'm not prepared to say you should do that, but I'm certainly not prepared to say you should.
I am prepared to say that it should be done in terms of like, some rules relax. Like, I feel like the people who are involved in this know stuff a lot better, know what the risks are. They know how to avoid risk, and they know how much risk they're taking on by, you know, cutting corners or whatnot. And they can assess, like, what risks are more of a risk than we take in normal times, but still a reasonable risk given current conditions. Or maybe it's better that this is not talked about and just done quietly. Probably not. That's a horrible idea. This should all, like, if that's happening, it needs to be discussed in full in public. But at the same time, I don't see that being an effective conversation.
I think you had it right when you said it's the kind of thing that should probably be being discussed in medical ethics circles. And it very well may be. But it's certainly not a call I'd be comfortable making. And I'm glad I'm not in the position to have to.
Have you seen the video? This was like in January. This is old now. in January, there are videos going around on the inner tubes of like nurses in China who were injecting themselves something that they said was like a potential COVID vaccine. So obviously, like, China doesn't have those same concerns. Like, they're like, what, you know, screw it, let's just go all in. If those were real videos, which they seem to be. So if I had to guess, China is way ahead of me here. They're like way past the like reasonable risk threshold and like straight into like forced human trials.
I haven't seen that video, but that very well may be right.
But at the same time, again, there is still no proof that we can actually have a vaccine.
No, that's right too. And even if we do, 12 months to 18 months, as long as that sounds to us right now, would still be a remarkably fast time frame to get a vaccine ready to be administered to people.
And to all the people. Like, even when they have one, it's going to be in small, like, you can't get enough for 7 billion people overnight. It's going to be months.
Did you notice that part of the news that they were pumping potentially hundreds of billions of dollars into this to minimize the risk to the private corporations who were undertaking these trials? I'm just curious, does the government get any benefit of that on the back end? Like, are they going to get these drugs at a reduced cost or for free or at cost to the companies? How is that going to work?
I don't know. I do know that one of the issues that's been going on with the U.S. Like production companies is that most of them, when they were like getting contracts from like the Oxford group that supposedly has a vaccine in progress, maybe, is that the U.S. facilities required like control over distribution rights. So like, basically the U.S. would get priority for it. And the foreign developers like, nope, we're going to go somewhere where it's not going to be limited in scope for who can get this once we start making it. So it could be that the U.S. is banking on U.S. companies, if they develop it, will be forced to prioritize Americans for the vaccine, which for a U.S. taxpayer-funded effort is not unreasonable.
No, not at all. I mean, I think once Americans have been prioritized, you would hope in the interest of humanity, as well as if that's not effective for you, the global economy, you would, after helping Americans, look for ways to help the rest of the world too.
Well, I get like prioritizing American production capacity for Americans. My concern would be like the IP side. Like, are we saying that we wouldn't share the way to make the vaccine? Like, because that's not acceptable. Like, okay, yes, U.S. companies should make the vaccine first for Americans, but the knowledge to make the vaccine should be spread far and wide. And that does not seem to be the case, like, in the plans right now.
I mean, yeah, I don't know. Those are good questions. And I also, you know, so much of this is going to be affected by the upcoming election and whether we have another 4 years of this administration or a new one.
Oh, that's so cute. You think election's going to happen?
I remain cautiously optimistic about the election.
I feel like everything we're talking about on the show, like, I feel like for weeks now, everything we try and like talk, like all the concerns, the important concerns of the moment and thinking about the future, I feel like we don't even know what we're walking into. I think that this is going to be a conversation we'll look back on and be like, oh, wow, this is what we thought was going to happen here. Well, turns out that was going to take a big old sharp turn to the left and whole new universe ahead of us.
Well, I mean, look, we're already at a point where the economy of 2008 is about to look quaint.
But is it? Okay, here's the other part I still do not get at all. And no one does, I guess. Why is the stock market still at absurd levels? There's no answer because it's absurd. There's no logic to it. It just is. Like, I guess because, you know, the Hill keeps like putting out bills that give trillions to private companies. But even then, we're looking at like 12 to 18 months of this, and still the stock market is registering like a medium warm, like, yeah, you know, this is not ideal, but we're pretty comfy anyway.
Yeah, I don't have an answer on that. I mean, I do not know enough about corporate valuations to begin to guess at that.
I don't think anyone knows. That's the scary part. Like, it's not like, oh, there's like some logic to it we can't understand. It's like no one actually gets why the stock market is still like, even Trump, he keeps saying like, and when you look at the stock market, it's doing a lot better than we possibly could have guessed given all the shit going on. Like, he's surprised. Even Trump's surprised that like the stock market's like still in the, you know, this is pretty cool, this is okay territory.
That's true. I mean, look, you're looking at, I don't know, losses of what, 20 or 30% as opposed to 50%.
I mean, we're not even at 20%. Like, we're at, like, a 24th. Like, it's not even... We're, like, at 2019 levels at this point. So, like, again, not great, not ideal.
I thought we were, like, 2017 levels.
No, we were at 2017 for a brief moment. And then the stock market was like, eh, global pandemic, everything shut down, 20% unemployment. Eh, that's fine. That's cool. And it went back up again.
Oh, okay. Well, so one of my coping mechanisms is not looking at the stock market.
I mean, lately, looking at the oil market has been more fun. So there's that. Okay, look, we are now at the Dow is now at 24,600. And on the 1 year scale, that is about the same at, or the 5 year. Let's go 5 year. All right. We were here last in, looks like about May 2019.
Oh, okay. Well, I happily stand corrected on that.
So, you know, that like, who the, but like, again, how is it possible that like the great minds of Wall Street are looking at this moment and they're like, yeah, no, this is just like May of 2019. That's how good I feel about the economy right now. May of 2019 levels.
I guess there may just not be specific reasons to sell stuff off.
Other than the fact that a mass pandemic is causing a great crush in not just production, but also demand to the point that like we're slaughtering millions of pigs because there's no way to actually sell them in the market. And no one can even buy toilet paper or like French fries. French fries are gone. Like if you are out there and you found French fries, I am so jealous because I have been craving them forever and I cannot fucking find them anywhere. That's how bad things have gotten. For real, though. Yeah,
I was going to say, maybe it's like literally just Gaines and Charmin and, I don't know, White Castle fueling the stock market.
We are living in a world where suddenly you cannot get a French fry, even if you're deeply craving one. That's personally my story right now. That's where I'm at. I want a French fry. I cannot fucking buy one for the life of me. And the market is like, this is May 2019. This is insane.
You know what? I'm gonna make it my personal mission to find a place you can get a French fry.
Please. No, I want frozen French fries, the home kind, so I don't have to go anywhere.
Oh, well, that might be more challenging.
I'm pretty sure there's still like a McDonald's somewhere in DC that's open, but I just want like a nice French fry at home. Is that such a big thing to ask? Apparently yes, because I've been trying for weeks.
You know, there are, I do find any sort of prepared potato product has been harder to find.
Speaking of which, my new obsession for like past 2 weeks, I think I'm single-handedly keeping Old Europe like still in business.
So Old Europe is a German restaurant in Washington, D.C., and it is amazing.
Yeah. Greg told me to order something there, and now it's like all I think about because it is the best delivery I've gotten since this whole thing started.
Yeah, if you ever have a hankering for schnitzel, man oh man.
So back to the whole like COVID economy, we're all gonna die part. Apparently, although the stock market thinks things are, you know, okay-ish, it seems like Republicans are getting a bit iffy on this whole Trump pandemic deal.
So I have thoughts on that. What are yours?
My thoughts are that Republicans are being very disingenuous here, and I don't think they're really scared of it. I think in the moment, I think it's not really a long-term concern that's being played on the media. I think it's a very short-term survival strategy. Survival is too much of too hard of a word there. I think it's a short-term coping strategy, in that they are currently finding it inadvisable to take a hard defend Trump stance. Not on, you know, on the grand scheme of things, they're still pro-Trump and still pro-defending Trump, but this exact moment, this particular bleach drinking moment, they don't want to go there.
Look, I think there are like perfectly obvious reasons to take that approach, not least of which is, as an elected official, maybe not contributing to someone killing themselves would be a position you're willing to take.
I wish that was part of the calculus. I don't think it is.
Well, if it's not, I think, you know, you've also seen some of this coincide with some not great polling for Trump's reelection prospects. And, you know, you kind of start to wonder if some of them may be seeing writing on the wall and saying, you know, this might be my moment.
That's how it's being played. And like maybe because it is kind of scary polling at times, but they've been here before. They've been here many times before. I don't think this is like a sea change. I don't think it's like a bail from the ship. I think it's purely like a, you know, every day is a new episode of the show, and tomorrow's episode will be different. This particular episode, let's just sidestep it. Let's just like bow out for a moment. What happened most recently, though, is that a memo was leaked, and it was a strategy memo from the Republicans where they were advising, you know, GOP officials on how to respond to questions in this particular moment about things like COVID. And the general advice was that Republican officials should not defend Trump, other than on the whole China ban thing, but should instead pivot to aggressively criticizing and attacking China, which on a political level makes total sense. And I don't think it's even necessarily like a anti-Trump message. I think it's a recognition that like defending Trump is not going to be productive. So instead, just start being xenophobic. Just start hating on another country and go from there. And it's not because they can't defend, well, they can't defend Trump, but it's also because it's just better overall to like not even worry about the issue. Unfortunately for Trump, he does not see it that way. He does not see it as like, this is a better strategy, and it's not about not defending you. It's about like changing conversation so we don't have to worry about it. He sees it as a personal attack on him. So he has gone on the warpath against the people involved, who immediately, of course, rolled over. We're like, oh, sorry, sir. Sorry, sir. Of course, we didn't mean that way at all.
Having read that memo, I suppose I understand why he would not be thrilled about it.
It's not great for him, but like, it's not like they're saying like, oh, turn on Trump and like, it's more like, no, let's just like not get in there.
No, it literally is just like, okay, so here's what we're working with. This seems to be our most effective message. I mean, in some ways, it really is what the Republicans opted to do during the 2018 election. You know, they passed this massive tax cut, and Paul Ryan famously is saying, oh, the Republicans are going to run on this. They didn't mention the tax cut in the 2018 election. They primarily focused on caravans and gangs coming from Mexico and Latin America. And, you know, or, you know, the Kavanaugh confirmations.
It's funny how the caravans stopped existing as soon as election was over.
Yeah. I'm certain the troops who were sent down there during Thanksgiving were very pleased with that development.
So in terms of a national strategy for the pandemic, we don't really have one. But as states, individual states, we all, at least the blue states, we all know something in common with Ukraine. I think it's fair to say. Because the new strategy for how to deal with like federal funding for states, I was going to say it's a little bit like, you know, like blackmail-y, but it's not even that. It's straight up like, do what we want politically, or everyone in your state will just die from COVID.
Yeah, so I think the background for this is that state and local governments fund themselves through things like income tax or sales tax. And as you might imagine, there's precipitous declines in the amount of those that are either coming in or projected to come in. And so states and cities are going to be faced with just slashing their budgets in a way that probably isn't ideal when you need critical services to deal with a pandemic.
Probably not.
Right. So when asked about this stuff, first, you had Trump say that he wasn't a fan of the idea, but if he were going to do it, he'd only do it if maybe they could condition the funding on blue states and blue cities adopting positions related to sanctuary cities and immigration that are more in line with his.
Does that matter right now? Does anyone want to come to this country still? Like,
that's a great point. I hadn't thought about that, but I guess I wonder, and I'm curious, what does immigration look like right now? Are people actively still trying?
So domestically, at least in terms of like domestic political sentiment, Trump's recent like nonsense bans on immigration actually pull pretty well. People are generally supporting of it, but like it's a meaningless thing he did. The whole like I'm banning immigration. It in terms of practical like effect, it's not meaningful. But politically it polls well. And I think that's because it's not about the immigration per se. It's about if you're asked like, okay, during pandemic, do we want people from overseas coming into the US? In general, Probably not. Like that's a fair call. Like in the whole world doesn't want people just traveling internationally right now. Like let's stop the whole international travel thing, which I think polling reflects.
But yeah, that's a very different question than you know, what is the appropriate approach to take with people who are already here?
Yeah, and I think Trump is misinterpreting this, like, support for his, like, stop immigration.
Well,
like,
I just, yeah, I think you're on to something there.
But it's not going to help, like, that whole logic, that whole, like internally, like, yeah, that sounds good reaction to, like, stopping people from overseas coming here does not apply to, like, how we deal with people here in the country already.
No, and it also seems like it's largely divorced from the purpose of the funding. It just seems like a way to force states and cities to adopt policies they don't want.
And by it seems like you mean it obviously is.
Yeah, right. I mean, I started thinking about this. It almost feels like if you had a Democratic president, this would be the equivalent of them saying to, say, Alabama, we're only going to give you
abortion.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Like,
never, ever, ever, like, contest abortion ever again, or you get no money.
Right. If you need assistance to help with a response to this hurricane, we will give that to you in exchange for eliminating all restrictions on abortion.
I mean, I'm laughing because, like, I mean, yes, Alabama should totally do that, like, hands down. But, like, the idea of doing it that way is so absurd.
Yeah, no, exactly. This is right, completely separate from my own opinions on that stuff. Just as a practice, forcing positions on a state or city that they don't want in exchange for funding that they need that is in no way related to the policy is not traditional.
I would say, one, it's, like, morally wrong, but, like, also hard, too. It's not going to work.
No. I mean, the other thing is, for if you're genuinely concerned about the economy, there was a Washington Post article this morning where someone was quoted as saying that, so basically, if these cities and states can't get federal money to help make up the lost revenue, they're very unlikely to raise taxes on residents who are already stretched. So if the federal government doesn't help with that, they're going to end up laying off or furloughing, you know, massive chunks of their workforce. You could see massive unemployment across the country just from municipal employees who have been laid off. That is not going to help an economic recovery at all.
Yeah. What does Trump think the stock market's going to think of, like, a U.S. where the blue states, where, you know, most of the fucking money is, are suddenly drowning and unable to get above water because of these federal funding limitations? And the red states, okay, sure, let's pretend Kentucky can thrive while New York is, like, dead. But, like, Kentucky may like that. The stock market, which Trump likes, is not going to like it.
No, it's not. And it's actually funny that you bring up New York and Kentucky. Did you catch the little spat between Mitch McConnell and Andrew Cuomo this week?
I didn't, but I was thinking of McConnell for sure when I singled out Kentucky.
So McConnell was quoted this week as saying that he didn't want to bail out blue states that were mismanaging pensions with federal dollars, and that, you know, we should just let states go bankrupt, to which a number of governors, Republican and Democrat, came back and said that's ridiculous. Jesus. But Andrew Cuomo actually had a very interesting response, which was, you know, you say that you don't want to fund our mismanaged state, but when you actually look at how much money we pay to the federal government versus what we get back, New York is at a deficit and Kentucky's at a massive surplus, meaning that Kentucky gets way more money from the government than it puts in. And the Rockefeller Institute for Government actually did a report on this. Kentucky's in, like, the top five states in terms of the surplus it's running in money it gets from the federal government above what it puts in.
Oh, McConnell's good at his job, or at least that part of his job, for sure. But and no state should be going bankrupt. That's not going to help anyone. But at the same time, if Kentucky went bankrupt, I mean, it wouldn't be great for anyone. Like, as a nation, it wouldn't help us. But
no, I mean, as a regular consumer of bourbon,
like, okay, there'd be downsides. I'm not advocating for this. Like, it would have downsides for sure. But overall, like, we could through it. It'd be fine. I mean, the bourbon part would hurt, but, like, we'd get through it. If New York went bankrupt, that's not going to go well for anyone.
No, I think in general, we can just agree that these policies we've seen enacted or proposed over the last couple of years, which seem to specifically target states based upon their politics, just not great. Like, punishing states economically because of how they vote is no way to run a summer camp.
But we've already gone from, like, that's not a thing we can do, it's not allowed, it's not okay, it's bad, it's not a thing we do in the U.S., to, like, it's happening now, but, you know, that's just not great. We don't like it that way. Like, it went from, like, impossible, like, no way, no how, to, like, oh, that's just how it is now. Sorry, guys.
Yeah, you're not wrong there. There was not nearly the outcry I would have expected. Though, I guess I don't know what that even looks like at this point.
But there can't be an outcry, because if the states, like, get too hard on Trump, he'll fucking, like, destroy their hospitals and leave them like the whole state to die. So
no, I actually mean like individual people. Yeah. Like there are times you kind of wonder if you're really unhappy about something, whether it's something as simple as calling an elected official from your state, maybe it's your senator or representative, and just saying I don't like this.
Who would that be, Greg? Who would we call for that?
Well, if you're in Washington D.C., you have limited options. But if you're in any other state, you can call your senator or representative, and believe it or not, those calls make a difference.
Yeah, call a bitch at them if you're not in D.C., because like we can call a bitch at Holmes, but, you know, not going to help anything.
Right. She does what she can with what she has. But
the rest of y'all, call a bitch. It helps.
Yeah, no, for sure. Again, if you are in a political office, if a politician gets 10, 20, 100 letters on something, they become very concerned about it. Because you have to assume that for everyone who calls or bothers to write a letter, there are probably 10 more people who think just like them but haven't taken the time to write or call.
Do you recall in the first year of Trump's administration, like 2017, when there were protests in the street every week?
Yeah.
And people were calling nonstop to the point the phone system started breaking down and you couldn't get through to call your senator if you had one. And that just went away.
It did.
Like, there was an intense, like, national revolt against what had happened. There was energy, and there still is energy. That's not gone away. But, like, there was a collective loss of faith that collective movements make a difference.
I mean, the irony of that is that I think they had some success early. So, like, the attempts to repeal the Affordable Care Act that failed, they failed in part because Susan Collins, when she went back to Maine, heard very loudly from voters they didn't want her to do that.
Yeah. Trump would have won now. If he tried, well, not right now particularly, but in a hypothetical world where there's no COVID, and this was his first attempt to do it, he'd do it no problem.
Yeah, you're probably right about that, because I don't know, even assuming you got Collins and Murkowski to vote against it this time, I mean, Romney's certainly not going to vote against it. I don't know who your other vote would be.
And also, people just, like, don't want to march in the street to have health care every week. I mean, they'll do it for a bit, but, like, that's not sustainable.
No, it's not. Although, I think there was some of that in North Carolina leading up to Roy Cooper's election. You know, there had been all of these problems in the state, and you had progressive groups protesting around I don't know if it was the governor's mansion or the Capitol there, but there were protests or demonstrations almost weekly.
Well, the good news for the Trump admin is that in this current part of our universe, they can be totally safe knowing there'll be no protests in the street against their administration.
No, the only people who seem to have the courage to go out into the street badly want us to reopen.
Yes. And they're mostly they're pro-Trump, but like pro-Trump with like a little asterisk mark. They're like, oh, we love Trump, go Trump. But why is he not opening the country fast enough?
Yeah, it is a fascinating group of people to try to understand the complete logic of where they're coming from.
The complete logic, as if there was.
I'm not suggesting the logic is coherent.
You're being very generous today is what I'm saying.
Honestly, like, I would just love to hear and be able to probe with follow-up questions. Like, why are you doing this?
But from a distance, though, over the phone. Because the leader of one of his movements has apparently tested positive for COVID. And when she was asked, she said a protest week before, she said no comment.
Yeah, maybe I'm being too generous.
Well, that is all for this week. Congratulations, everyone. We have survived day 60? 50? 5? Am I close? I don't even know. Day 40, 50 something of quarantine.
Yeah, I have no idea. We're like in what, week 7?
I don't even know. When's the last time like you went out and did something?
Oh, man. I want to say mid-March.
I got groceries on like March 11th. I remember that. And that's like the last time I like freely went anywhere. And I didn't go freely. Like I still like I snuck out and like got some groceries and ran back home. But like I didn't wear a mask. I went out like without thinking too much about it.
Yeah, I think I went out to dinner in early to mid March. I mean, at that point, you kind of had a sense that something was coming, but it seemed like it was still within reason okay to go to a maybe a smaller, less crowded restaurant.
And then never again.
Yeah, no, I have not been. I have not been back.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, I kind of remember right around then was when we found out the NCAA was canceling their basketball tournament. That was the moment I knew this was very real. It was going to have lasting implications, and it was something to be deeply concerned about.
One day, not too long from now, someone's going to get a PhD writing about how like public sports canceling saved a million lives in America. So,
and apparently, it's also having some positive effect on climate change.
You know, silver linings, I guess.
You got to look for them, right? Because otherwise sitting at home is pretty miserable.
Yeah. Well, thanks for joining us this week, Greg. Again, air quotes. And sometime in 2022, let's grab a drink.
Sounds good. Kentucky bourbon on me.
See you then.
All right. See you then.
A big thanks to all our listeners for tuning in to the 45th podcast week after week. And if you'd like to give us further support, you can do that by becoming a patron at patreon.com/45thpod. By doing so, you can become a supporter and patron for as little as $5 a month. And to do so, again, go to patreon.com/45thpod. A shout out and thank you to our sponsors. They make this program possible. And I urge our listeners to please check out our sponsors and use their products. And thank you to them for helping us produce week after week. Thank you to our audio producer, Hannah McCarthy, our executive producer, Meethal Thelhan, and you can find us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Our handle is at 45th Pod. Our website is www.45thpod.com. Thanks again for tuning in. See you next week.